Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Craig Ruffalo, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. Today is August 7th. It's Friday. And I am here alongside the Vice President of McKinney Flavelle and partner of mine, Kevin Combs. Kevin, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Craig. But you just said you're right here alongside, and I'm looking for you, and I don't see you.
Well, I'm virtual, you know, in today's days of social distancing and distance learning and everything else. I'm there in spirit, my buddy, but I'm here physically at the household, sitting at the kitchen table, staring at the dishes going, God, I really need to do those, but yeah, I'm still working.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think with the kids going back to school next week, I'm going to have to change my locale. I may be coming to visit and going to the office on a more regular basis starting next week.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So things are crazy in the sugar world and on the commodities themselves. And I thought, you know, we've got a USDA report coming up next week, the WASD, and it would be interesting to kind of have you and my take on what we see going on because, you know, like everything else, the weather has been the dominant factor in a lot of the conversations on the commodity markets up to this point. But we're going to start to sense that production numbers on these crops are going to get more real as we get closer to harvest. So I'd love to hear kind of what your forecast is. And let's talk a little bit through about the corn fundamentals and see what you're hearing, and I'll give you my take on it. What do you think on the yield? Do you think that the 180 and a half industry average is going to hit?
Well, you know, that's going to be a real interesting number come August. And here we are August, and, you know, the numbers aren't even really based on field work. They're based on surveys. So yeah. I don't know if even August is going to be your best bet for getting the real number, but certainly the trade seems to be expecting anywhere from 180 up 1.5 to, I've seen and heard numbers as high as 185 based on, ooh, you know, good weather, things going well. So I think you got to kind of go in the middle road at this point in time until we really start seeing some of the crop tour results, etc. And, you know, put it right there about 181 for this go around. Right,
there you go. The windshield tours have definitely been abound. You know, we did our own with our young Mr. Eric Thornton on his venture back from California to New York. And even at that time, his windshield tour certainly would suggest that there was a progression on certain crops and they had spottiness of dryness. And of course, what did we see? But in the most recent weather reports, I saw that maybe a little bit of dryness in western Iowa, but the rest of it seemed to be pretty promising as far as yields. I kind of tend to agree with you. I wouldn't want to go overboard on my yield expectations quite yet, because as you point out, we don't really have a good sense to on the ground numbers yet. I think the real key to me, Kev, is if they get the crop out of the ground, or in this case on corn, if they're harvesting it on time and they're not waiting for the last half of a bushel, we're going to end up somewhere in that 181, 182 range, and we're going to have a well over 15 billion bushel crop. And anything over 15 billion is going to be, in my estimation, a little bearish to price. What about you? Do you think if we'll hit 15.2, 15.2.5, is that going to be a little more downside to the corn price in your estimation?
You know, before we get to price, I think you got to look at the demand side a little bit further. And if you had asked me 2 months ago, I'm saying, hey, ethanol is tanking, no one's driving, the roads are empty, and they still are today, yet ethanol production has made a really nice V-curve recovery, and they're still down week to week on their production, but much higher levels than where I thought they were going to be.
Yeah, that's true. The ethanol demand, certainly, and I think you got to pick up in the USP for hand sanitizer, you know, maybe it's not just all fuel.
That could help out. But even some of the numbers, you look at the ethanol production, I thought it would probably be more about ethanol. Maybe I'm wrong there.
You know, I think at the end of the day, we've picked up. I mean, what, we were 30-some% below year ago levels, and now we picked up to a point where we're about 10.5% below last year at this time as far as total ethanol usage. So certainly a positive move in that regard. ADM did come out and reemphasize that they were still continuing to idle two of their dry mill ethanol plants. So they didn't have any timetable for bringing that back online. But hopefully some of these smaller dry mill operations that were idled, that were sole operations, have come back on stream as a component of this pickup in ethanol demand. And of course, exports. You know, exports are still being driven a little bit by China, I guess, but still behind the curve, isn't that right?
Well, they caught up here. They've had some huge days of purchasing a record amount of corn. And so I went from thinking exports for 1920 were going to be, you know, significantly low, another, you know, 50 million bushels or something like that, maybe 75. And now it's looking like they may reach current USDA estimates for 1920. And then 2021, they've been buying a lot more corn for 2021 as well. USDA is forecasting a, you know, a healthy increase over 1920. At 2.15 billion bushels. Are they going to reach that number or not? We're a long way away from that, but they're off to a really good start, pulling despite all the tensions between the U.S. and China continuing.
It's amazing how economies and trade still continue despite the rhetoric in the public eye as far as the political environment when it comes to trade talks. And in this case, the U.S.-China deal would be a prime example of that. I agree that the administration has certainly tried to flex its muscles to try to prove out that the U.S. is going to hold firm on tariffs and what have you. And as a result, I think that the supply-demand balance sheet for corn is going to ferret out to a positive as far as production, and perhaps maybe the industry will look towards the production numbers being more or less the key factor on price. But I agree with you. If you didn't have a pickup in demand, that could be really a bearish signal for corn prices.
Yeah, I guess the bottom line is here, you know, you look at ending stocks, the USDA's July estimate was 2.65 million billion bushels. I think you're probably going to see an increase in that number. And so getting back to your price projection, Craig, I think what people really want to know, December futures contract bottom, you know, usually we see that happening sometime around September. Is that going to be above or below $3 a bushel?
Ooh, you know, that is such a challenge, because I'll bet you there's a good amount of commercial activity that's got some potential buy orders right around that $3 a bushel basis December for physical cover. And I think that's going to be a heck of a support level. But if you don't get the demand pull in the next few months, I think all bets are off, and you could see it below $3. If, again, you get a 15.15 or higher billion bushel crop out of the ground. Certainly, if you get a 182 yield or higher, I would think the motivation on the psychological behavior of that kind of huge yield on a national level would indicate futures would probably be continue to be pressured, which would be curious, Kevin, in that sense, if we do, let's make the presumption for just a second that corn values on December futures go below $3. What is your take on how that might impact the regional basis levels? Would we see a laggard effect, or would we double down and see a negativity on basis, or would that prove farmers that they're going to have to hold on to that and maybe try to get back some of the value of corn in the regional basis numbers?
Well, I think where they can, in certain areas that are short or higher basis numbers, they're going to hang on like crazy. And you've seen more and more on-farm storage over the years. It's, you know, relatively easy to put on and hold off to that crop and look for higher values later on in the crop year. And I'm sure it'll be more of the same we've seen this year, with, you know, basis continuing to stay at more elevated levels despite the huge supplies.
I think you're right. So for ladies and gentlemen that are listening, I think the response is that the higher the pressure level is on the downward draft of futures, don't look for basis to weaken anytime in the near future as a double down. So be patient. Watch that. Watch this yield curve on where the corn production is going to go, and stay tuned next week. We'll obviously get a chance to see how valid our projections are. On the soy complex, I took a quick look at the balance sheet from July's WASD report, and what it looks like everybody's estimating is no different in that balance sheet to the corn component. Again, higher production, higher yields, a little bit of an increase in carry out, but still some strong demand estimates on the soy complex. So we'll see if they break 850 on Nov beans. That would probably be a good benchmark in my estimation. We're about 25 cents off of that. Any comments there, Kev?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, similar to corn, I think the over under on the yield for soybeans is probably around 51 and a half, 52 bushels per acre. And that'll be a make or break. If you see a number above that 52 or higher, I think, you know, you'll see some further pressure. But otherwise, you know, a little bit more neutral on soybeans and the soybean complexes. You know, demand seems to be fairly decent, and we don't have near the stocks issue that we do on corn.
I agree 100%. So if you're, again, looking at things that might be signals for price direction, I would not ignore the soy complex as far as the balance sheet for the carryout projected for 1920 and the yield projection for 2021 as indicators on bias for the soy price, because obviously that corn-bean ratio is going to come into effect come the plantings next spring. Hey, switching to sugar, which is, you know, no minor commodity in our world, and certainly I think right now the way things are going on the sugar market, you know, we've got a projection on production right now in July of just over 9 million tons split, you know, 5 for beet and a little over 4 million tons for cane. You know, have you heard anything coming out of the beet world where we're going to potentially see a change in their harvest timing? Have you heard anything going on in the ag side, on the beet side?
You know, the crop has progressed fairly well. There's been a lot of moisture, particularly in the northern end of the Red River Valley, which was of concern because they also planted late. But, you know, when you get the warm days, we had a lot of good warm weather there for a while with that moisture. That can help drive the crop and turn in some decent yields. And as long as it wasn't too wet, it looks like yields are trending upwards. And that was really the one critical area that was a big question beyond, you know, some replantings in Idaho and then the flooding that we saw in Michigan that could drive some averages down. But it looks like everybody was able to get the replantings in place. And I'd look for a big upside, particularly on the beet crop here. You know, we were 5 million tons, as you mentioned, in the July estimate. That was up 35,000 tons. They took a little baby step. Here in August, I think they're going to take at least another full step this time. And maybe you see 5.1. But when we get down to it, I think when you see a final crop number, you're probably looking more like 5.2 million tons for the beet crop.
Well, that certainly would put you back in a few years ago position where we were talking near record production, and that's probably due to the yields that they've got potential going on. I've seen a few pictures of some probably what would be called the hallmark or the ideal growing areas within certain co-ops, and it tended to look like the beets were very healthy, the canopies were very healthy, which would tend to give you the impression that they're ready to come out of the ground a little early. I go along with you. I you know, there's a real potential for this to hit 5.2 at the end of the day, and it will probably, the sugar content will be the key element to that and their extractions. On the cane side, I think you've got a different worry, and that's because we're right in the middle of what season, Kevin? The hurricane season.
Hurricane season, and it sounds it's a nasty one.
Yeah, I saw that article you passed around to the office. I think it was either yesterday or today that said that there is projections that this is possibly one of the worst in the last 30 years of a potential hurricane season. So we're not out of the woods as far as cane production goes.
No, you're only about a third through hurricane season, which, you know, typically we don't see too much damage even when a hurricane hits, as long as it's not a category 4 or a category 5, or, you know, hits a refinery or a worse situation. You typically, when it just goes over the cane fields, knocks the cane down, comes back, stands back up, and that moisture can create a little bit of issue, but you know, sugar content and maybe a little bit on the yield as well. But you know, I think what maybe big hurricanes, 10% damage to a crop in the state is about all we typically see at most. So I don't think you got to worry about it too much at this point, but that nasty season is upon us. So, you know, we're going to keep our fingers crossed on that. And I think I read that in 2005, they ran out of letters in the alphabet because they only used 21 of the 26 letters of the alphabet.
Oh, my.
And this is now being forecast to have more named storms than the 21. So let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that there's no hits to the not only the sugar areas. I shouldn't say that, but, you know, people in the Northeast just dealing with 6, 7, 8 inches of rain could say, you know, let's hope they don't hit population areas at all.
Yeah, I'm from your lips to God's ears on that one, and Mother Nature too. We certainly don't need any more interesting components of 2020. I think we've had enough of those different events. We don't need another one. Obviously, I think one last thing on the pre-WASD, Kevin, is everybody is speculating in our world, and particularly I think within our own shop, about the sugar demand numbers. So the food use for numbers that they've come out with, you know, they lowered the current year slightly, but they've kept their projections for the 2021 year at about 12.125 million short tons. Do you anticipate that USDA will change that number at all in August WASD or even in the future?
Well, that's always the big question around here, and we have a lot of conversations about it. I'm actually really curious to see what June delivery figures look like and see how sugar came out of that, because the April and May data were really pretty wild. You saw the huge uptick in retail. A lot of businesses picked up a lot of demand from pantry stuffing and hoarding, etc. So I don't know that we can get a really good idea what's going on there, but I think things kind of settle out a little bit more in June, and then July will have a better impact of what this type of shelter in place policy means on a longer term basis. But projecting out anything beyond what the USDA is doing and kind of going with their normal rate of increase is probably a potential disaster in the making. So I kind of applaud them for their approach, because I wouldn't want to do anything different at this point, just with so much unknown.
Yeah.
But you know, with demand, you know, certainly there's still businesses struggling. You look at the two categories on deliveries for food use that are hit hard right now, beverages, which, you know, you hear some areas where beverages are doing really well, and then other areas where they're doing really bad, anything going into food service, for instance. So I think between the confections and that being down, you know, you look at some of the other categories, you started to see baking and cereals starting to go down after the initial bump. I think it's down. It's okay. Just really a matter of whether this continues to trend that direction because of sheltering in place and, you know, job losses, less income, less good feelings about what things are going to look like a year from now. So if I were betting, I would take a lower approach and say, hey, maybe they should be looking at 2021 flat to down a hair versus current estimate. Probably just say, hey, let's just go at 12 million 50, something like that, and see what happens. But I respect what the USDA is doing and the approach they're taking, because it impacts what they do on imports and Mexico. So let's just be conservative,
right?
Go that route. And you know, but they probably want to be getting that down if it's lower, as we could end up with too much sugar from imports if they're not too careful.
Bingo. They're going to try to keep to that 13.5% most likely. And if they don't manage that the demand side quick enough, they could oversupply it and be looking at some changes, certainly to the balance sheet. Well, hey, I know that's a lot of data for folks and a lot of commentary ahead of this WASD report. It's critical to a lot of people out there listening. And I appreciate your insights, Kevin. We'll wrap it up there. And, you know, one of the things that we did not too long ago is announced that McKinney Flavelle's gotten involved in the CBD world to try to educate folks on what's happening out there. And our fair young Mr. Thornton did a good job on his webinar recently. So if you haven't checked that out on the IQ platform, I suggest you go ahead and upload it and listen to it. But if you're interested in reading about the CBD world and what's going on, you know, McKinney Flavelle, Kevin, has put out a white paper. We've published a study that you can get and download for free. You go to our website and grab it, www.mckinney.flavelle.com. And I encourage everyone to get a little more educated on that environment. You know, obviously, we've got a long way to go before it's federally legal, but we're going to get there at some point, I think. So with that, we'll wrap this episode up. And as Mike always likes to say, Kevin,
live in attitude with gratitude.
Absolutely. Everybody have a great weekend. Be safe out there, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Flavelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Flavelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.